to the Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by our seven-time NBA champ. That's so fun to say. Robert Horry and former number one overall pick in the WNBA draft, Miss Chinee Ogumike. Star of stage, screen, and commercials, by the way, I should say about Chinee. Coming up, as we approach the one-year anniversary of the NBA postponing its season, we will reflect on how that day changed everything. Our insiders are going to be joining us for that discussion. First, though, welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Yep, the shortest All-Star break in recent memory is already over. Play starts back up again tonight as the NBA begins its all-out sprint toward the postseason. And there are a lot of questions out there, some very basic, like, will each team actually play its schedule this year? Even with the docket reduced to just 72 games, it's going to take some serious work to get in everything that was postponed in the first half of the season. The Grizzlies and the Spurs each have 40 games left to play in a span of just 68 days. And that's only with what we're dealing with as of now. What if there's a whole new COVID outbreak in one of those franchises? At some point, the NBA can't keep postponing games and may just have to cancel some, since the playoffs have to start on time, so they can end on time, before the Olympics. That pressure on the calendar, it's a big deal, and it's one of the reasons you are starting to hear NBA officials talk so much more about the COVID vaccine. As Adam Silver noted this past weekend, the new guidance from the CDC is that people who are vaccinated don't have to quarantine, even if they are directly exposed to someone who has the virus, which means that players who do get the shot won't have to sit anymore for contact tracing, which in turn would lead to more available players and fewer postponements, and maybe even relatively full arenas by the time we get to the playoffs. Still, COVID hardly the only question as we push into the second half here. The trade deadline is just a couple weeks away, and it promises to be a weird one. More teams will hit the deadline in playoff contention than ever before, thanks to the new play-in games that keep even the conference's 10th seeds in the mix. That means fewer sellers and more buyers, plus chum in the water in the buyout market that has frankly already started. Yes, that was Blake Griffin and Steve Nash having coffee in Brooklyn yesterday as the Nets welcomed their newest teammate. So will Brooklyn romp through the second half of the season and enter the playoffs as the clear favorite in the East? Where does that leave Giannis? And what will Joel Embiid have to say about it as he also tries to win his first MVP? Yes, brace yourself. This second half, we will have a lot of debate over the MVP as it is shaping up to be one of the more competitive races in years. There's also going to be a lot of talk about whether seeding matters in the West. Will the Jazz stay atop the conference? They sure could with the easiest schedule in the league for the rest of the way here. How much more bubble wrap will the Lakers decide to keep Anthony Davis in, even if it hurts when they sit where they sit in the bracket? Well, that will also be a factor. Will the Suns be able to keep up the good vibes? What about the Knicks, who've got one of the NBA's tougher seven-and-a-half schedules? Personally, I've noted the whole way here. I am less focused on the Knicks' actual win-loss record than I am on the team finally starting to feel like a competent franchise. If they can keep turning the ship in the right direction, it's going to be a successful season, even if they don't make the playoffs. The same, of course, can't be said for Boston or Denver or Miami, which have each underperformed expectations so far. Will they all improve in the second half? The answer, of course, is we don't know, which is part of what makes sports so fun in the first place. So hopefully you got some snacks during the very briefest of intermissions here, because it's time to follow your ushers and settle back into your seat. The curtain goes back up tonight. So, Robert, what team do you think is under the most pressure in the second half of the season?
With the addition of Blake Griffin, it has to be the Brooklyn Nets, because you already had the three-headed monster with KD, Harden, and Kyrie. With them now getting this guy, Blake Griffin, who was an all-star, a dunk champion, all these things that come along with him, there's got to be a lot of pressure on you guys, because now you think about this. KD and James already been to the finals and lost. So that's more pressure on them than it is Kyrie, because Kyrie's won the championship. Blake hasn't even been in the running to be in the conference finals. So there's a lot of pressure on the Brooklyn to get to the finals and win it. Not just get there, because getting there doesn't mean anything. They have to win it with that crew.
Well, KD, of course, won, but not when he was playing with Harden. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What about you, Chinee? What's your second-half pressure cooker team?
Yeah, well, there are similar storylines going on in the East and in the West, but there's more pressure in the West on the Lakers and LeBron James for an answer that my guy Robert said on First Take earlier today because of health. Even though they are without you know, Kevin Durant right now, they still have a lot. They're getting Blake Griffin. You know, they already have James Harden, who has, you know, masterfully changed roles. And then you've got Kyrie Irving. Who does LeBron James have? He has a supporting cast that we're trying to figure out, will they step up? They're really missing Anthony Davis, his 22 points, his 8 rebounds a game. And so I think especially in a year where 2 seasons are wrapped into one for LeBron James, your number one star is 36 years old, you're waiting on AD to come back, they're feeling the pressure, even if it doesn't amount in changing in the standings. And your girl always comes with some nuggets. Mm-hmm. Since the 2020, you know, bubble restart, no player has logged more minutes, scored more points, handed out more assists, made more shots, taken more shots, or finished off more fast breaks than LeBron James. He's literally doing it all since the bubble started, and now we have that 71-day turnaround, and so it's 2 seasons wrapped into one. A lot of pressure on LeBron James. The cool thing, Rach, is he's built for it, right? Mm-hmm. But the question is, will he have enough? Will there be enough synergy to sort of repeat once again, hopefully when AD comes back?
Robert, you were with the Lakers almost every night. What do you think?
You know, she's totally right. We always talk about load management and how we wanted to load manage LeBron. He got mad at everybody. But this is why we wanted to load manage you, because you've done so much. Think about it. 36 years old, been in the league, gone to the finals so many times. That's a lot of miles on your body. So we're not saying that you cannot do it. We're saying just take the time so we can get the best performance out of LeBron in the finals, because he's going to the finals. There's nobody in the West can really stop him except the Clippers. And I don't think
you
the Clippers
just
are going
to... that take
in? You got to slide that in there. Because
I know, right?
But the Clippers giving up Montrezl Harrell and guys like that, they don't have the punch off that bench like they used to. So LeBron has a take a step back. I think this All-Star break was great for him, because he didn't play as many minutes in the All-Star game as he probably would have liked.
Are you
so
kidding?
All the Laker fans were like, yes.
He was smacking on the bench, which was amazing.
Yeah, that's LeBron, you know, doing his thing and always going to be there for you. And he's amazing. He's a machine.
All right, I want to move on to the Heat and a much more serious situation with forward Myers Leonard. He is dealing with the consequences from footage that surfaced yesterday where he was heard using an anti-Semitic slur during a video game live stream. Leonard will be away from the Heat indefinitely as a result. The NBA said it was, quote, gathering more information about the incident. Here's part of the apology that Leonard posted on social media on Tuesday, quote, I am deeply sorry for using an anti-Semitic slur during a live stream yesterday. While I didn't know what the word meant at the time, my ignorance about its history and how it is offensive to the Jewish community is absolutely not an excuse, and I was just wrong. I am now more aware of its meaning. I am committed to properly seeking out people who can help educate me about how this type of hate works and how we can fight it. The Heat statement on Leonard read in part, quote, the Miami Heat vehemently condemns the use of any form of hate speech. The words used by Myers Leonard were wrong, will not be tolerated, hateful language from anyone associated with our franchise. To hear it from a Miami Heat player is especially disappointing, hurtful to all those who work here, as well as the larger South Florida, Miami Heat, and NBA communities. And you also got a weigh-in from prominent Jewish athlete and 3-time Super Bowl champ Julian Edelman. He wrote an open letter to Leonard, which included this, quote, I get the sense that you didn't use the word out of hate, more out of ignorance. Casual ignorance is harder to combat, has greater reach, especially when you command great influence. Hate is like a virus, Julian wrote. Even accidentally, it can rapidly spread. Chinee, what's your reaction to the situation?
I think Julian was so on par. But, you know, first and foremost, I think that the Miami Heat and the NBA are already going down the right path, starting with an investigation for ultimately probably punishment, maybe a fine, right, for Myers Leonard. And rightfully so, because the energy that I'm on, and I think that most people are on these days, whether it's public or private, there's zero tolerance for hate speech. I mean, period. As a society, we've been having these conversations, especially after the summer of 2020, where it's like now being heightened, those emotions and feelings, where we've been actively educating ourselves on where we stand. And this was another instance of whether, you know, Julian Edelman brings up a great point about, you know, it being, you know, hate or ignorance or even casual ignorance, which he sort of identified as the hardest one, the one that's more pervasive, the one that's harder to address. And so using that opportunity to mend that fence was very commendable, you know, by Julian. But overall, you know, these are necessary conversations that need to be had. I'm glad that the Miami Heat are already, you know, having this indefinite indefinite leave so that he can go through acts of contrition to all the parties that have felt, you know, offended, whether it is public in the apology or private, because we know his ownership, you know, group is Jewish, you know, the owner of the team, also CEO. And so this is not something that, oh, I didn't know I said it. It's like we have to be accountable for our words. And the craziest thing is this was on his own platform that he gets paid on, you know, through his partnerships. And just to be comfortably saying something that you may not be consciously of, even though you're, you know, you're live, it just sort of shocked me. I think it just is a greater opportunity for all of us to educate ourselves and make sure that we stay on point, because this was not it.
This is totally not it. And for me, I'm looking at this guy who's a pretty popular streamer. Mm-hmm. So that means he has a lot of young kids looking at him. Now, these kids have heard that. They don't know what this word means, but they heard Miles use it. Mm-hmm. And so now they're going to go out and use the same word in the same way, thinking it's cool because this guy's it. So that's my biggest part. Don't give me a half apology. I'm not really satisfied to apologize. Yeah. I hate when guys come out and say, oh, I'm going to put this on my Instagram or my Twitter, whatnot. No, you got Instagram. Get on there. Let me see your face. Let me see the words come out of your mouth. Let me feel that heartfelt sorrowfulness of you saying this statement. And for me, I just can't let him slide with this statement. I hope the organization does something, because if we look across the way, you know, we had an owner who said something and he mm-hmm. had his team taken from him. I don't want this guy's career to be taken from him for words, but I do want some punishment to be held out, remaining for the rest of the season, him be banished from the team, no pay, to make him really feel this and make him research and understand what he said and how hurtful these words can be.
Now, of course, he's been away from the team because of an injury, and even this being away from the team now officially, it is still with pay. This is part of the agreement that the players' union has with the league. The league is the one that metes out discipline. There's an interesting piece this morning from Ira Winderman in the South Florida Sun Sentinel looking at different punishments in the past for using slurs. He said that it was about a $50,000 fine was the maximum the NBA can levy, that they are typically also allowed to give a suspension. So a one-game suspension is what we've seen in the past. And according to the Sun Sentinel, one-game suspension, that paycheck would be an additional $65,000 of Meyer's salary. I do just want to read, guys, one thing. In the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., there's a quote up on a wall, and it actually comes from someone who wasn't Jewish. He was a Lutheran pastor who lived through the Nazis in World War II, and he was actually put in a concentration camp because of his opposition to Adolf Hitler. And this quote is, "First they came for the socialists. I did not speak out because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists. I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews. I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me." We've had so many conversations this year about what we owe each other, right? Do we owe each other wearing a mask? Do we owe each other being safe? What we owe each other so often is to raise up the people around us when other people take shots at them, even if those shots aren't at us specifically. We can do that in this league, and I am looking forward to seeing how the league reacts to this. I know that they will. All right, coming up, we got to get back to basketball. Caesars William Hill now listing Joel Embiid as the betting MVP favorite. Does the panel agree? We will discuss that. Recommends for today, Kevin Arnovitz explaining why NBA insiders are saying that the amount of threes taken in today's game is reaching a critical mass. That is over on ESPN.com. And check out these numbers, including the playoffs. 61 games in NBA history have featured at least 90 three-point attempts. 45 of those 61 have occurred since the start of last season, according to ESPN Stats and Info. The three-pointer now represents about 40% of all field goal attempts, which is up 61% from if we go back like 10 years, basically. So really excited to have Robert Anchenet here for this topic, because look, Robert, you played with the three-point line your entire career. You hit some huge threes. Again, his nickname, Big Shot Rob, just saying. But the volume back then was nowhere near what we're seeing in today's game. So how many threes is too many threes for you?
I think for me, 30. Okay. Is that tipping point. And for me, I'm watching the game now, and it's kind of like, who is not a three-point shooter? You have these bigs that cannot shoot threes, and they're shooting threes. Yes, I know three is more than two. We learned this in preschool.
Right.
And this is, but Does it really matter if you're 3 for 10 and you can't shoot it? Everybody thinks that's good. That is poor. You gotta shoot. If you're gonna shoot 10 threes, you gotta at least make 6. That means you're hot. So I just can't do it. All these guys are shooting 3, and I blame Steph and I blame Damon because after watching
them, they turn around and blame you, Robert. Yeah, so there you go.
They've taken it to a whole new level now. But you know, the 3 game has messed up the game because now everybody thinks they can shoot it. Go back to being Joel Embiid. You see what he's doing. I know he shoots a couple, but he's making his bread and butter in the paint.
Look, I'm trying to get, like, Robert, okay? I'm trying to get that 3 in my arsenal. And when I think about this 3-point explosion, I think it's more so obviously a product of analytics the last few years. But this season especially, let's talk about it. With that short turnaround, a lot of teams might be a little bit more gassed, right? They're trying to put up points. So if I'm a coach, you know, I'm probably telling them, hey, we're going to shoot 3s and then, you know, look to get to the rim, not necessarily like doing too much in the mid-range. And so that's a strategy that I've heard from my personal coaches. Say, hey, we're on a back-to-back. Let's line it up. Let's spread the floor. Let's keep the ball moving. Attack the rim when you have a lane, but let's try to find each other from 3. So I do think that this season, it's interesting with the number, but overall, I'm not surprised. And that's because the way the game is right now, Rach and Rob, like, it's crazy. You can't be a player without incorporating the 3-point shot as a part of your arsenal. You know, that's just the standard for players growing up right now. That's what you're forced to be able to do. You know, maybe you're the small ball 5, right, or the one center, but people expect you to not, you know, use that as a weakness as a part of your game. And so the 3s are here to stay. I think for the future, every hooper that's about to develop and grow, they're going to have that 3-point shot as a part of their arsenal. I was a part of, like, maybe the last few, you know, the kids that played outside, you know, we could be a post and all that type of stuff, and you could just bang at the rim. The game has changed, and I don't think it's going back.
Well, look, yeah, Chinee, we can tell Robert why I always say in these discussions, yes, 3 is more than 2, but 2 is more than 0. So if you have a good shot that's a mid-range shot or close to the hoop, you should also just take that one. I do, yes. I will say, as a fan, it is fun when Damian Lillard or Steph pull up from where they pull up from because they make the baskets.
I'm ready for guys, the 4-pointer.
Chuck, right? So in the All-Star game, we should get a 4-pointer at least.
Yes.
All right, let's move on. I promised some MVP conversation at the top of the show, and yes, indeedy, Caesars William Hill Sportsbook has now moved Joel Embiid into the MVP favorite slot heading into the second half of the season. It is the third different player atop the MVP odds so far. Luka, remember, came into the year as the favorite. Then he was overtaken by LeBron, who is currently now in second with Embiid in first. I like to always remind people, these are betting odds. They are based on who Las Vegas feels will attract the most money put on these guys. Not a basketball analyst deciding who is most likely to win MVP. But that being said, Chinee, do you buy Embiid as the MVP favorite?
I do, and I'd like to first acknowledge that, Rach, yeah, when it comes to the NBA Offensive Player of the Year and 4-point line, we stay on the same team.
Thank you. Chinee has my back. My back.
Always. I agree here. I think Joel Embiid has emerged as the MVP in the NBA just because the last 2 weeks have changed a lot. The Lakers, I believe, have lost like 6 out of their last 8 games. But what Joel Embiid has done, we've asked him to do like 2 things, right? To be consistent with his game and then also be available with his health. And he's delivered on both of those things. Number 1 in the East, you know, with the standings. And he's given you what? A 30-point double-double, 30 and 11. A very similar narrative that earned Giannis, you know, with the best record in his conference. And those same statistics, you know, the MVP award a few years ago. And so Joel Embiid has sort of been that consistent one, getting his team to win, producing on the floor. And when we're talking about 3-point shots, I think he's shooting like 41 to 42% from 3, which is super impressive. He's picking and choosing better shots this year, which is why Philly has a shot to really rival the, you know, Brooklyn Nets to sort of compete this year in a way that we never really expected.
The thing about being in the East, everybody in the East watches their games and then go to sleep. So they're sleeping on LeBron James. LeBron James every year has to do something to let everybody know he's still the man. It's amazing. Last year, he said, okay, I'm going to lead the league in assists. This year, I'm leading the league in everything. You know, it's like, but I don't get enough respect. I just say, he wants his damn respect. Give this man his respect. But, you know, I will. I'm a big at heart, and I love Joel Embiid, and he's doing his thing over there in Philly. But come Come on. LBJ and MJ always got slighted on the MVP, so we know who the real MVP is. But, okay, pass it around. Give it to Joel Embiid. Okay, it's cool. But we all know it should be LBJ.
It's going to be a good race. It's going to be good. There's so many names in the conversation, and we'll see who comes to the front as we go here. Chiney, thank you so much for joining us today. Chiney's going to go do her radio show. You should listen to that after we're off the air. But after this break, still on this show, we're going to look back at the events of March 11th, 2020. Yep. COVID shutting down the NBA a year ago. Ramona Shelburne and Royce Young, Royce, of course, in OKC when that game was postponed, will both join The Jump next.
And fans, due to unforeseen circumstances, the game tonight has been postponed.
Stunning isn't the right word, just crazy.
Tonight's game has been postponed.
Breaking news from the NBA, the league has been suspended.
You think this is, you know, it's not going to affect us. We're the NBA. One of our players has the coronavirus. These are things that you watch in movies.
To play in an empty, quiet arena, it would be different. It'd be strange. We just won't know until or if that does happen.
Yes, it was a year ago tomorrow when everything changed. And I now want to bring in ESPN senior writer Ramona Shelburne, our reporter Royce Young. Ramona, you've been working on a lot of podcasts, big piece about all of this. You've been all over it. Take us through what you've learned on the quick decisions that had to be made that night with Adam Silver, Michelle Roberts, and those in the building in Oklahoma City.
Well, Rach, you know, one of the things that was surprising to me as we dug into this, which was that the first person who really learned about Rudy Gobert's positive test was the governor of Oklahoma, Kevin Stitt, who just so happened to be at the Thunder game that night. Now, Royce knows he's a fan of the Thunder. He goes to games. But he was there that night because he had a business meeting with a local company. His commerce secretary asked him to go. He gets a phone call about 10 minutes before the game. And, okay, there's a positive test on the Utah Jazz. What does that mean? He immediately calls Clay Bennett in, the owner of the Thunder, Sam Presti, Rob Hannigan, and they huddle in this conference room trying to decide what to do. As soon as they get Adam Silver on the phone, Clay Bennett says to Adam Silver, Adam, what is the NBA's policy on this? What should we do with the game tonight? And Adam says, well, what's the state policy?
Right.
And Clay Bennett says, well, I got the governor right here. And it's amazing to me how much of that decision was made in about 10 minutes right before the game in a little conference room there at Chesapeake Energy Arena where, and Royce, this is where I'll pass off to you because you were sitting right there when this happened. Rob Hennigan and the trainer for the Thunder say, okay, they decide we got to postpone the game. So they run out onto the court and Royce, I'll hand off to you. What happens next?
Yeah, I mean, what the most bizarre thing there was is how quickly it escalated and, you know, as we all know, and we've seen in NBA games, that's not a typical sight to see people running off the bench onto the court right as the team is literally about to throw the ball up. I mean, they got the song going and everything. The players are huddling around. And so it was not an expected moment to see.
Yeah. What do you remember just from being in the building as the hours ticked by, Royce? Because you went thinking you were covering a basketball game. You turned into being a reporter on crisis coverage. And I felt like we at ESPN did not let you leave. I just felt like hour after hour, there was Royce Young. What do you remember about how that day kind of went for you?
It's funny, Rachel. You know, at one point, nobody was sure if the Jazz would leave either. Sam Presti was actually arranging cots to see if the Jazz needed to stay at the arena that night.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, Sam, can I get a cot, too? Because I ain't going anywhere either if the Jazz aren't leaving. But, you know, it's funny that Ramona mentions Governor Stitt. You know, I remember one of the first moments after I stood up and I went back underneath, like, and they wouldn't let me go near the Jazz locker room, but we were set up as close as we possibly could be. And one of the first things I remember was Governor Kevin Stitt walking right through those doors that I wasn't allowed to go back behind and walking right behind me. And I looked at a producer with me that night who deserves a ton of credit, Patrick Abrahams, and I was like, that's the governor. I think something big is going on right now. So, I mean, look, there are so many vivid and visceral memories I have from that night that just jump out at me, Rachel, from all the health officials showing up late into the evening, them shutting a curtain behind it, them arranging and putting on masks and gloves and breaking open all these testing kits and all these little just crazy moments that happened where they were kind of these out-of-body experiences of like, I was supposed to be watching an important basketball game tonight, and instead I'm watching a moment, not just in NBA history or U.S. history, but really world history.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly, I mean, it's an understatement, but it's a night I'll never forget.
No, I mean, we've talked a lot over this past year, but it bears repeating, the Jazz being stuck in that locker room, having people come at them in hazmat suits as if they all had Ebola, and this is before we all knew what a COVID test felt like, and when they were doing all of the jam it all the way up your nose, back to the back of your throat version of the test, and having all of that happen without them having any of the experience that we have now. It was a totally different feeling. Robert, I think about you and how many years you played in the league and have now been around the league, and there's literally never before been anything like this that happened. You have this expectation, right? The calendar is the calendar. We start at this time, we play on Christmas Day, we do this, we do that, and this ripped all of that apart. What did that feel like for you, Robert, who's been around this game for so long?
It almost felt like when you have a strike, and right, all of a sudden, guys, but you knew, yep, there's going to be an end to that.
Mm-hmm.
With COVID, you didn't know what was going on. I remember there was some events I was supposed to do for the NBA, and they was going to send me to Istanbul. And I'm like, am I getting on this plane? I was so scared because there was no knowledge out there about it. It was new to everybody. So I called the NBA, and it's like, oh, I can't go. And they was like, why? I said, because of COVID. And they was like, you're okay. I'm like, no, because I don't want to get stuck in Istanbul because,
yes,
I can't come back. And
yep,
it was so new to everybody in the world, and we were still trying to function and do things, but the smart people was like, oh no, this is not gonna be good. This is gonna be bad, especially for people like me who watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm not going anywhere. And I think the NBA handled it extremely well. I think all sports handled it extremely well. And we as Americans are handling it because it was new. It was something we never thought would happen, but we're handling it. Hopefully there'll be better days and everybody can return to the arenas.
I have not watched the movie Contagion since all this started. I'm just saying that. Ramona, in your piece, Adam Silver talks about the future. What are his thoughts on moving forward as our country begins to climb out of this pandemic?
Yeah, and I think this is one of the more optimistic sounding versions of Adam Silver that we've all heard in the last couple of, maybe the last year, which feels like 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long it feels to you, but, you know, he said the first thing is the one thing he's learned throughout all of this is that the virus is in charge, okay? So he can feel something and think something. The night of March 11th, they had just had all these meetings about, you know, shutting down arenas to fans. That's where they thought they were. And then within a few hours, they're shutting down the league indefinitely. And I asked him at the time, how long did you think that would last? He goes, I really thought it would be 30 days and we'd come back and play games. I didn't think we were going to be 4 months, okay? But what he said the other day when I spoke to him, you know, on this anniversary that's coming up here, is he said, you know, even just a few weeks ago, a few months ago, I was not as optimistic as I am now in terms of the future. And for the future, he is optimistic with this caveat, the virus is in charge, okay? Mm-hmm. Don't think too far ahead. That by next year, by the beginning of next year, which is September, October, that the NBA will start to look more like normal. Like there could be fans, a lot more fans back in stadiums across their league. Right now there's fans back in about half the stadiums and they're obviously limited, but even just that sense that the NBA could be back to something resembling normal by the start of next year is really something.
Well, Ramona, everyone should go read your piece on this. There are great details in there. Adam Silver taking calls in his car. Michelle Roberts, too, trying to manage everything. Ramona also has a radio show to go to. Everyone's doing a radio show except for us, Robert. We got to work on that.
I know.
But Royce is going to stick around. Coming up, we're going to be talking about some of the greatest in-game dunkers of all time, sharing the feeling of putting someone on a poster. There is some great video in this piece. You got to see it. Stick with us. Many basketball fans who grew up in the 80s and 90s, friends, you remember having posters on your bedroom wall? Do people even do that anymore? I don't know. Now we just have non-fungible tokens. Not as fun to put up on the wall. Anyway, while the joy of pinning posters has given way to watching highlights, the term posterized lives on, and meeting at the rim, oof, some of the explosions have been amazing. In this SC feature piece, some of the greatest in-game dunkers of all time discuss what it means to posterize someone. Take a look.
I think the whole meaning around somebody getting posterized is, you know, that it's almost like time stands still. And all the cameras
cameras are flashing at the same time. It's a nice poster on somebody's wall.
It's a shot of life. You feel superhuman.
To be able to go out here and holsterize somebody just to take the life out of them means everything. I really don't give a damn who is out there on the court. Whoever gets down here below this rim is getting dunked on.
That's a poster.
I'm thinking of all of these posters that I had as a kid. Like The Rock, The Baby, Dr. J, and Michael Cooper. Like Sean Kemp, Dominique. I said, I want that feeling. I want to do that when I dunk on somebody. I would go to a Nerf hoop and just imagine doing this on somebody who's a 7-footer.
I'm coming in from the left side. Michael Cooper is coming straight down the middle of the court, and I see him flying in like a banshee out of hell, and he ducked so he wouldn't hit his head on the rim.
It's gonna be stolen, I think, by the doctor. Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray Rock the Baby to sleep and slam dunk.
It just became one of those plays that are so memorable.
Jeff's got it right up into the alley.
We call that the Lister Blister. It belittles a person. Nobody wants to be dunked on.
My greatest inspirations in dunking, of course, you got Michael Jordan. With his style and grace, was just fun to watch.
Never dunked on you. He never put you on the highlight.
No, no. He said, I would love to give you my poster, but it's not happening.
You can't take the camera off because he doesn't want it to be in the camera.
I want you to listen to this and go back in the archives and get it.
MJ. Oh, he did it! Oh, Michael shakes the finger!
He said, I never dunked on him. And I said, well, I'm going to eventually get you before I leave the game.
Right out of the building. Never have I seen the home team play highlights of the opposing team. They played that in that arena over and over again. You heard the crowd go, ooh.
Play before when I went to the hole and I laid the ball up. Karolinko was under the basket. And he looked at me and he laughed like, all right, dude, I'm gonna let you get this one. Like, don't do it again. Next time you come to the hall, I'm smacking that out of here. And I was like, you know what? If I get a step, I'm gonna try it. I was like, oh, shit. I got Karolinko.
Never in my life did I think that I would be able to jump over a human being. There was a dunk over a 7'2" guy in the Olympics. No bigger stage than that. And if that doesn't do it for you, then I don't know what will. When I first started hearing guys in the league come in and say, man, when I was in middle school, I had your poster over my bed. I had it on my wall. There's that young kid like Vince Carter who was watching saying, I want to do that.
That's where we get our motivation from, our inspiration. That's where we go outside on our goals, lower the rim, and practice those dunks that we see on TV.
The thing that kind of brings me peace and joy is that when you can inspire people that come after you, that lets you know you've done something right.
There's so many, like, crazy athletes. I think of Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon, Spider Mitchell. I think Zion has the potential.
If you could surpass the heights that existed before you and move the bar up a little bit higher, then it becomes a great challenge for the next generation.
Anthony Edwards, put that on a poster.
I've seen that with Dominique, Michael Jordan, Vince Carter, Kobe Bryant. There's always the next guy up. It's not to replace the guy before him, it's to join the club.
Nothing like a good poster. Coming up, we're going to talk Wizards. They're back on the court tonight, but what will it take for them to make an actual playoff push? That is next on the Beal World. Love it. Love it.
This is the true story.
True story.
Of 17 strangers picked to play on a team.
We're all adults.
Work together.
I can't do you guys' job. You guys can't do my job.
And have their lives taped.
That's frustrating.
Find out what happens
when people stop being polite.
And start getting Beal.
What a dog.
The Beal World.
D.C.
Our newest show within a show. I love it. The Wizards facing the Grizzlies, having won 8 of their last 11 to move back into the wide open East playoff race. Remember, they're going to play 38 games in the second half of the season to make up for all those first half postponements. That is the third most in the NBA. Washington currently trails the 10th seeded Pacers by only a game and a half. Is only 3 games behind 6th place Miami. And Royce, of course, we got the play-in tournament this year, which means 10th place is important. What do you think it will take, Royce, for the Wizards to make that playoff push?
I think it's really simple, Rachel, and I think that's Russell Westbrook consistently regaining his elite gear, because that's really been the difference for them in this successful run that they've had over the last month. Is Westbrook is back and looking more like Russell Westbrook. There's been a lot of questions, as we know, Rachel, about his age. When will he start to slow down? What kind of player will he be when his athleticism starts to wane? I've written about this. Russell's talked about this, but the reality is the guy still has an elite gear. He can still get there, and he came into the season and had to deal with something that he really never has had the challenge of in his career, and part of this was due to his advanced age, is he was dealing with nagging injuries, and he's always been somebody that plays through everything that he possibly can. But I asked him about it on a call a couple weeks ago, that and he understood that he needed to take a step back, rest up, get healthy. Now he's healthy. And that could be the thing that propels the Wizards.
Man, watching the Beal World, I just want to say, can I have a banana cognac or something? You know, it's just amazing. But Westbrook is going to be the key. If he can make his free throws down the line, he's still an elite athlete. He can get to the hole. He can blow past anyway. But the thing is, will his mindset be right where he'll pass the ball and make the guys around him better? That is the key for him.
Yeah, look, it was very interesting to me to hear Bradley Beal say over All-Star Weekend that Russell Westbrook is the best teammate he's ever had. But that was quite interesting to hear, and says that they have clearly clicked. We have some Marcus Smart news I'm trying to sneak in here, but our producers took it off the monitor for me, so I can't even say what it is. He told reporters, I'm getting it from producer Steve, he's expected back tonight. Producer Steve to the rescue there tomorrow. Okay, fine, producer Steve, tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow too. Actually, no, we won't. See you Monday. Bye.